So the So the Marysville High School Board Report. Okay, January 23rd, to start the New Year's right, the leadership class did a fundraiser at the Cookie Tree in Yuba City. The maximum amount one can receive is $150. We were confident that we reached this goal with the help of the student staff and longtime friends of Marysville High. And then January 26th through January the 30th. This week, right on the brink of homecoming, reminds our school of the caring of leaders and individuals. It is named Kindness Week. We began yesterday with kindness to animals, where we had pets on campus from a local sponsor, and the students were able to interact and gain knowledge of the sponsoring organizations. Today was kindness to hometown heroes, where the focus was on the firefighters and policemen that kept this town running. The school signed a very large card, and the stations received baked goods to live in their day. Still to come this week, kindness to students, to stick to friends, where students will be writing compliments on sticky notes and putting them on friends, acquaintances, and strangers. Kindness to military. They will come to visit, and students will write individualized cards for the military. And kindness to teachers. At lunch, students will be putting notes inside of balloons and giving the balloons to teachers. February 10th through the 13th, winter homecoming. The shortened weeks resulted in only 4 dress-up days. Tuesday, pajama day. Wednesday, floral. Tuesday, Thursday, Disney day. Friday, black and orange day. Keeping with winter tradition, the school hallways were to be decorated, and the clubs will be decorating shopping carts to be parted out at our school rally and game. This should be a wonderful moment. Should be a wonderful, momentous time. Our boys basketball varsity team has been experiencing a most lovely season, 19-1. Upcoming event. Every year, the school fills out matchmakers for the students to find who their true loves are in the time for Valentine's Day. This is one of the most anticipated events every year, and it is sure to be as successful as it always is.
Good evening. Can you hear me? Okay. Good evening. I'm Jennifer Hill with Crow Horwath, the auditors of the district, and tonight I'll present to you the financial statements and the required communication letter. And if you have any questions, feel free to ask during the presentation. We do an audit of the financial statements as well as state compliance and federal compliance. And with that, in the audit report that I'm sure you all have read, from front to back, there are the opinions. And in the front starts the auditor's opinion, which is an unmodified opinion, which is what you would like to see. And following that is the management discussion analysis. That's a good section to read to understand what's going on at the district, what potentially could be happening at the district, those kind of things. Following that are your financial statements. And in those, there are a couple of areas to highlight. One is the government-wide financial statements, which you see that starts first on page 17. And there is, again, government-wide, which includes your fund financials, which you look at throughout the year, and then adds in any capital assets and long-term debt. So that is comprehensive of everything at the district. Following those on page 17 and 18 is your fund financials, and that's, again, what you look at throughout the year. Then it's followed by the notes to the financial statements, which give a little bit more information on those financial statements. And then to the back of the report, that if you turn to page 62 in the report, the page is blank, and that's good. That means that there were no audit adjustments during the audit, and so the numbers that were presented to you were correct throughout the year, and we had nothing to report on audit adjustments. Always a good thing. And then another page to highlight towards the back of the report is the findings and recommendations section. And on page 73, again, is a summary of our results. So it shows the opinions on the financials, the unmodified opinions on federal and state as well. And then following that would be if there were any kind of findings. And again, there was one finding related to student body accounting. There were none related to federal or state compliance, which is great. And then it also presents the status if there were any prior year findings or recommendations, which there were none. So at the end, there was one finding related to student body. Other than that, a clean audit report. So that takes a lot of work. There's a lot of transactions that occur at the district office, at the sites, and so to have this, great job to your staff. And then, any questions on the audit report itself? Okay. I will move on to the required communications letter. And what that letter states is our responsibility as part of the auditing standards. Any new pronouncements that could impact the district, significant estimates, any audit adjustments, again, there were none. There was one uncorrected misstatement, which is related to the government-wide financials, not to the fund financials, related to your bonds and the accreted interest. And then there were no disagreements with management. And at the end is the representation letter, which management represents to us that they have provided us all the information we need to conclude on this audit. So that's that letter in summary. Any questions on that?
I just want to say it's a relief to see a clean bill of health there. Mm-hmm. I always go to the back first. And
I was
going to
say, yes,
first.
I probably should start there, yeah. And then, you know, it'd be silent. Yes.
On a scale of 1 to 10, how would you rate it?
I don't know that I could rate you because there's so many different pieces to it, but I would say, like you had just mentioned, having nothing on those findings and recommendation pages, I think you can rate yourself there.
And I have. Thank you.
Anything else?
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Next, we have a budget update. Ryan?
Okay, good evening. Good evening. Tonight, as Jennifer from our accounting firm looked backwards, I'm going to look forwards. Because this month, the governor of the state of California, Mr. Jerry Brown, released his proposal for the 2015-16 budget. And that proposal is for the fiscal year that will start July 1st of 2015. To kind of give you perspective, I always bring out this budget reporting cycle and kind of take you through the budget cycle every year. We adopt the budget along with the LCAP, because LCAP is an intricate part of our budget adoption process now. And we go through the year until we adopt the budget for the next year. So in December, I presented the first interim financial report. Well, now we're already got January. We have the governor's proposal for the next year. So now we have a really good idea of what we believe our funding will be. And you'll see we'll have a second interim coming in March. And then we'll develop a preliminary LCAP and budget through our advisory committee, ultimately making recommendations to the superintendent, who will present the draft to the board. And then in May, there will be a revise of this governor's proposal, and it may have some changes, obviously. There's always at least some kind of changes, but it should be relatively close to what I'm going to present to you tonight. Then ultimately we'll adopt for the 2015-16 school year. But this is really starting the process for that 15-16 school year and the budget that goes with it. So there's a lot of themes here. Overall, though, the real important theme is economic growth and public education receiving the benefit. Obviously, the economic activity is up. It's on the rise, stronger job growth, and then the lower oil prices as of late has really helped the economy as well. Obviously, Prop 30 helped a lot, but even without that, the economy has been improving a lot, and that's benefited schools. A lot of the new money is going to Prop 98, and Prop 98 is exactly what passes on to school funding. So that's good. Not only is there more money, but it's going to schools. Governor is still staying on track with LCFF, Local Control Funding Formula, and the LCAP. So that's not going anywhere, and it's part of his eight-year implementation plan. There's been a commitment made to adult education, which doesn't impact us as much, but career technical education, which is very important in our schools. Wall of debt is going down. What that means is he's retiring all the deferrals, all that debt that grew during the economic downturn, and now he's really focused on building a reserve at the state level that we've heard a lot of talk about. So it's a good budget, and the governor, even in his increases and what he's giving schools, is very conservative. He's really taking these revenues and not really committed them until the next year, so he's used it to pay down the debt. And so he, even though we're getting more money, it's a really measured approach that the governor's taking. And Prop 98's working for us now. It wasn't working for us in the last few years, but we'll obviously take the benefit as the governor continues to apply more money to schools. And you can kind of see, this is the total amount in billions for the state of California. And you can see 11-12 was our lowest year. And obviously Prop 98 was the least amount of money that was being provided to schools. We're considerably up over the last 4 years. And we felt the impact here, and we will continue to feel the impact as we project into 15-16. This also shows a quick chart of where we are in the implementation timeline. As we talk about it, it's going to take 8 years to fully implement LCFF and get us to that former funding level in 2007-2008. If we did a graduated approach where they gave an equal amount every year, that would be the blue. But the governor has exceeded that approach, and cumulatively, if his proposal goes through by 2015-16, we'll close that gap from where we started and where we want to end up as part of LCFF by 58%. So first 3 years have been accelerated. Don't know how the next few years are going to be. Might go a lot slower, but the first 3 years he's done a lot in terms of closing that gap. So with all that, really, here's are the major proposals that are going to impact the district. There's $4 billion overall to close that LCFF gap, increase funding for schools and school districts. 1.1, this is another big one that's separate from our ongoing funding, but there's $1.1 billion being dedicated to the Common Core, well, Common Core and any discretionary use, really, but it's a one-time money, so kind of like when we had the Common Core funds that were set to expend by this September, we could spend it on things, and they recommend Common Core-type expenditures, but it's one time. Once we spend it, it will be gone, but that's another boost to help districts get their materials and their infrastructure ready for Common Core. I'll have more details on the amount of that for us later. There's another $1 billion he spent to close the deferrals. As we said, he's trying to bring down that wall of debt, and he's successfully done that. $273 million for emergency repair program doesn't impact us as much, but there are some emergency repairs on facilities statewide. Another thing that could impact us is $250 million in one-time CTE incentive grants, and he wants to implement that each of the next 3 years. So that'll be an opportunity to enhance or impact our CTE or ROP programs. And then $198 million has to do with growth in the current year, and a $6.9 million decrease in ADA next year. So that's just the average daily attendance statewide. And then finally, there's another amount of grants or kind of one-time money for internet connectivity and infrastructure in the amount of $100 million. Those are the salient big proposals that are part of his overall budget proposal of the governor. One thing I want to keep in mind, and this is the data that's really at the low point, but even as of 11-12, these are the last actual expenditure data we have, California was still, per student, 46th in the nation, 71% of the average. And we're making progress, and I'm sure the numbers for 13-14, 14-15 will show some increase, but we're still well below the average, and we're well below the top states. So in perspective, we're making progress, but I want us to understand, you know, California still has a lot of way, and we as citizens of California can impact that, and we still are not dedicating the amount of money per student that a lot of states do. So, well, again, LCF is improving that, but we're still behind. So I talked about those discretionary funds and the $1.1 billion. It's actually $180 per average daily attendance. So not our total enrollment, but the percentage that actually attend school as of the reporting period we use in March. And the governor doesn't mandate it, but he suggests the one-time funds be used to further implementation of Common Core state standards. And the other uses he talks about is English language development, the newly adopted materials and implementing that, and also the next generation science standards that come with Common Core, as well as expenditures that revolve around the accountability of our LCAP and the LCFF. The technology infrastructure amount, again, $100 million, it's to add to one-time grants to secure internet connectivity and infrastructure in order to administer those computer-based assessments that come under Common Core. We've already done a lot of that. We're kind of ahead of the curve here. They had a first recipient. None of our schools were on there. So, you know, we'll look at opportunities to do this, but compared to a lot of school districts, we're actually far more connected and we have a better infrastructure than a lot of school districts. We'll continue to look at this, but the money will be available to many school districts. Some things that aren't included, and it's important just as much what's in there as what's not, because these are still needs for school districts across the state. There's no money for a statewide facilities bond, although there is talk about generating that money, and he wants to make sure facilities are funded. We're no different than a lot of districts. A lot of schools were built 50s, 60s, or earlier, and, you know, there's a need there. We don't have the growth statewide that we did for many years, but there's still a lot of facilities and aging facilities. And I'll talk about this in a little bit more detail later, but CalSTRS and CalPERS rates, so our pensions for our employees, the amount that our employers have to contribute, so the district has to contribute, is increasing greatly, and I'll get into that. But there's no separate funding to handle those increases. It comes out of our LCFF dollars. There's no funding for new funding for transportation. Again, we're funded pennies on the dollar. Far less, I think, you know, less than one-tenth of what our actual costs are. And so there's no additional funding for transportation that comes out of LCFF dollars. And then there's no expansion of early childhood education beyond the 14-15 state budget agreement. So nothing was addressed there. On the funding formula, I talked a lot about the $4 billion. What that equates to is a 32.19% closure of the remaining gap. And you saw cumulatively that's 58% of the gap over 3 years. And average, statewide average, that's an 8.7 increase. A little more here because we have a higher unduplicated count. I'll get into that. So giving you all this information, it's really about what does it mean for our district? Like, how does it impact Marysville Joint Unified? And you can see the funding in 15-16 will be up to, we anticipate, and these are all estimated numbers based on the governor's proposal, will be over $8,700, almost $8,800 per ADA, and that's average daily attendance. If we remain at the same average daily attendance, which is 8,700, again, we have an enrollment over 9,500, but there's attendance and other factors when students aren't counted through the year. We'll have a projected revenue of $76.8 million. Plus, we'll have that one-time discretionary money, 180 per student times the 88, of approximately $1.6 million. Again, one-time money to be used on things that are one-time in nature and don't recur. So for us, I kind of want to see, we talked about how much money that is. Well, let's look at where we're at and where we're going. So I'll just pull up all these numbers and try to walk you through this kind of intricate graph slowly. So right now, 14-15, the adjusted numbers, because they're always slightly being adjusted by the total funding we'll get from the state, we have a total of $69.7 million in state funding under LCFF. 61.9 of that is base dollars and can be spent on any unrestricted purpose. Cumulatively, based on last year and this year, we have $7.8 million that are from the supplemental and concentration grants that have to do with our unduplicated student count. That has to have a purpose to increase or improve services for students. Next year, as we move forward, if the governor's proposal goes through as proposed, our projection is we'll increase our total funding by $7.1 million. And of that $7.1 million, $4.3 million will be from supplemental and concentration grants, so more of that purpose to increase or improve students, whereas $2.8 million will be base dollars we can use for anything. And you could see, of the total gap, that's really substantially closing that target. and we'll have $21 million remaining. That's based on 14-15 numbers. Again, this target, that number changes year to year based on your ADA. So that's a moving target. So that's the target as of what would be 15-16 if we project the same average daily attendance. So another good year, it looks like. Governor's obviously been very close. The May revision may change it somewhat, but we're looking around $7 million increased funding. And this is just another note to remind everyone, though, but the State Board of Education, their regulations require districts to increase or improve services for eligible students in proportion to the increase in funds generated by those pupils. But again, there's a calculation that requires how much we actually get for supplemental and concentration and how much proportion of those unduplicated count. Currently this year it was at 82.6%. But the goals, action, services, they need to increase or improve support are really a local decision. So we have to compute that actual calculation, but how we apply it is really up to us as a district. Again, going to the career technical education and ROP, $250 million over 3 years, going to be one-time money. And some of it will be a matching grant program, but, you know, CTE or career technical education, ROP, that enrollment has decreased by nearly 12% statewide. So the governor is addressing this issue. We're not alone. A lot of districts really need that technical education program. It's really crucial and essential for their success as a district. And our, for example, our consortium, now that those CTE and ROP dollars are rolling into LCFF, our consortium is slowly but surely phasing out. And so next year, out of our LCFF dollars, out of that 7.1, we estimate, $400,000 is going to have to be there to start phasing that out and start funding our current ROP program through the LCFF dollars. So right off the bat, of that $7.1 million, $400,000, we're going to have to put that. That's already part of our LCAP, and we'll have to move that forward. Another part is school facilities. Again, there was a lot of state local bonds passed. We've had a couple, obviously, in 2006 and 2008. But, you know, there's not a lot of money coming from the state and other sources to use in capital projects. The one good thing that's come, well, it depends how relative speaking, but another thing that's coming out of the year is when we had those economic downturns, routine restricted maintenance account was used to be required to be at 3% of your general fund expenditures. That was temporarily flexed. Well, that runs out in 15-16. So in order to be in compliance with the law, that will now be back in effect unless there's any legislative change. That's going to require another $580,000 out of LCFF funds to match that 3%. So that's a legal requirement. That is something we anticipate to come out of that $7.1 million, give or take a few dollars. So it does pull from that increase, but and another point, it's fully funding routine maintenance as it was before the economic downturn, which obviously is important for the school facilities to be in the type of condition we the standards and conditions we expect. I talked earlier, too, about the pensions and CalSTRS and CalPERS. This is the chart of the increase. So you can see where we went to 8.88% this year, employer contribution, and the depending on whether they're pre- or post-pension reform, employees' rates increase too. And they'll increase until next year, 16-17, but then they'll stay flat. Well, the district's going to go from 8.8. It all impacts everyone, obviously. They're going to see it on their checks. And then the district, too, part of that $7.1 million is going to be spent on increasing from 8.88% times each employee's salary that are certificated or CalSTRS members to 10.73, 10.58, 4.44. There's a lot of push, especially from districts, about saying, well, we're getting this money for LCFF, and then it's getting eaten up by these things because the state mismanaged or the state programs aren't working well. So there's a lot of push from districts. We'll see how this develops. But as far as we know now, this will come out of LCFF dollars, as well as CalPERS. CalPERS, they're waiting the final rate, but it's going to jump from 11.771 to 12.6%. That has an impact. These things are obviously going to be part of the money unless the state provides other funding. So if you look at cost increases next year, too, salary and step increases, which is subject to change, there's obviously impacts. We're still in negotiations with a lot, but that's nearly about $770,000 of the increase next year. There's statutory benefit increases. I just talked about CalPERS and CalSTRS. That's another nearly $750,000. as well as inflation on goods and services. We have to build in our consumer price index, which is pretty much from the dartboard from school services, and that will increase our services and goods by about a little over $220,000. Altogether, just our initial estimate is a little over $1.7 million, just rising costs, just part of doing business as a school district. It's we're going to see that impact next year in the budget. So when you look at it, kind of looking at where we are and what steps we're going to take moving forward, it's still a good year. Another good year. We had an $8.6 million revenue increase for 14-15. We anticipate a $7.1 million increase for 15-16. $2.8 million being base, we can spend it on anything. And $4.3 million being really those targeted funds for supplemental and concentration grants. But again, we have some things coming in 15-16 I want the board to be aware of that are going to be required, that some of that money will get dedicated to before we really start developing the LCAP, which we're in process of, and we're working with our advisory committee. But about $1.7 million of just those rising costs, ROP funding of $400,000, and the routine maintenance of about $580,000. But I mentioned we're in the process of building that LCAP committee. There's a couple board members that are members of that advisory committee, but that I say LBAC, and that stands for LCAP Budget Advisory Committee. We'll meet again February 12th after the next board meeting, and we'll continue our efforts trying to move forward and getting really prioritizing the kind of actions we can take with this additional money, because there still is additional money for next year, and we anticipate. Second interim, we'll have a little bit more detail. We'll have our impact of our current year funding through January 31st, and then we'll have a multi-year projection. That'll have a pretty accurate depiction of 15-16. We anticipate it to be around a $7.1 million increase, but we'll build more of those expenditures into next year's budget. So at the state level, too, what happens after the proposal? They have a lot of state committee, budget committee hearings. May change, may not, to a degree. We don't know. May revision will come out about mid-May, and we'll have we'll hone in real good on next year. But this is the basis for us planning for next year. We know pretty much where we're going to go now, and so that's what the future holds for 15-16 financially for the district. Any questions? Or I know I went through a lot of things kind of fast.
Ryan, we've expressed as a board we'd like to reinstate programs that we've had to cut over the years. Any comments on that?
Well, there's going to be available funding to do a variety of things. I think that the purpose of the advisory committee is to receive input from people so that we can prioritize what those programs are or what those initiatives may be. And hopefully through that process, we'll get to be able to produce results to the board that really show what the impact. We have needs assessment, and I know Dr. Todd isn't here tonight. She'll present on her LCAP progress next meeting. But obviously there will be money available to do a variety of things, just like this year, and we're still not done with this year. There's still surplus that remains that we're trying to obviously increase and improve services for students, and that's always the goal. So there will be money available to do those things. It's just a matter of prioritizing which ones we want to do.
My other comment, if the other board members would think about it, it seems to me that in 2005-06, we had about $76 million in our budget back then, before the big cuts. So it looks to me like 15-16. If your information is correct, we'll be back where we were in 2005-06.
So the height of the funding was 2006-07. They're trying to get back. Let me go back to that Prop 98 slide. You could see. Actually, I don't know if it shows that, but. Go back to this slide. 7-8 was actually the height. So 5-6 was the year right before, 2 years before 7-8. And so we have overall 58% implementation level of towards the gap. So they're trying to get to an 07-08 level. So there's almost 60% of that. And so we're at a level that's a couple years from what that peak was. But we're above that also because we're not an average district. Our unduplicated count is higher. So we're likely, I know we are higher than the average of the state. We're higher than 58% to where we were. So it doesn't surprise me that we're at a level that was at zero at 2005-2006. We may reach our 07-08 level next year, whereas some districts might not reach it for 2 or 3 years. It just depends on where you are, again, on that sliding scale of unduplicated count.
Right, and I appreciate your hard work with these proposals and reports that you give to us. I'm just wondering, since there is so much information in this, do you think we can have a little earlier night of the meeting so we can at least take a look at it?
Yeah, I could try to get it to you guys with your Friday packet, because I did have it done Friday. So with future things, I can try to. It depends on, obviously, other things that are occurring in the business office, but I do try to get it done the Friday.
A lot more, ask questions a lot more readily.
And feel free to, if we have follow-ups to through the superintendent, I can provide those, and she can provide those in Friday memos. If you want a follow-up next meeting, I mean, again, I'm always here to provide information. It's whatever you want, but I will try to get them with the Friday packet when possible.
Ryan, I would just like to state, looking at those supplemental and concentration funds, that is actually number one priority in our LCAP. So we certainly have a plan laid out in the LCAP to utilize those funds for that targeted group.
Yeah, and I think you're going to have additional funds, you know, to really focus on that targeted group. So it's going to be, again, well, I kind of talk about the year-to-year. We talk about the multi-year projection. Every year we're going to have to look at where we are with the LCAP. How are we using those funds? What's available, because there will be years eventually where we don't have all this additional money, so we'll have to look at different ways. But every year you're going to really have to analyze how those dollars are being spent. It may come to a point, and it likely will eventually, I don't know when, but maybe by the end of the decade, for example, when the Prop 30 money goes out, maybe another economic cycle where you're talking about, hey, what have we implemented in the LCAP, what's worked and what hasn't, because we have to start reducing again. It's going to happen inevitably, so as we spend this money, we really have to evaluate and be held accountable on how we spend the money.
Okay, thank you very
thank
much.
You.
Next on the agenda is the comments from board members. Mr. Boom? Mr. Rasmussen?
I would just like to say that last week I was able to attend the California State Board Association's new member conference for Friday and Saturday to try to get caught up to the speed of the rest of my colleagues here. Learned quite a bit at that conference. Two things that they really tried to stress to us is that whatever we're doing here, we certainly need to keep students as number one on our priority list. And the second thing they stressed in all four of the sessions is to follow policy. So students, number one, follow policy, and you should be okay with what you're doing on the board.
Mr. Fleury?
Yes, I've got my CSBA report. As I told you earlier, I found a typo in on the way in, so you'll get it in your Friday memo, be sent out. The purpose of the report is to provide an extensive overview of the last CSBA conference. As four board members went, I went earlier as a CSBA delegate. This is my third term. We begin on Saturday, December 13th at 7:30, and we start meeting as a region. In our region, we have Butte, Colusa, Glen, Nevada, Placer, Sierra, Sutter, Tehama, and Yuba. And in this region, we talk about where we're going as a district and get feedback from other districts. Are you doing what we're doing and what is going on? We met until 10. We then dismissed, went into the General Assembly, in which all 240 delegates throughout the state meet, and we go through a lengthy agenda. We went through until 5:30. We had took an hour break for lunch. Then at 6 o'clock, we met to meet the new delegates who are running for CSBA leadership. On Sunday, December 14th, the delegates then met at 7:30, and we voted electronically for our new leadership, which was something new, where we voted right then, where they get the results immediately. Immediately after the election, all the delegates throughout the state, about approximately 270, met and continued to discuss the oncoming legislation, what we can be concerned about as a board, and hearing reports from the CSBA leadership. The president of CSBA, Vernon Billy, who has now been with us for 3 years, expressed the ultimate goal should be for all school boards to have absolute transparency, integrity, and ethics. This was the same thing he said last year, and he said you can't go wrong when you have that. He stated this should be a practice for all boards. We finished our agenda at 1, and then we dismissed and went to the regular conference, which four of our colleagues went to that conference. One of the goals for this year's meeting was to urge the repeal of the school district's reserve cap included in SB 858, which is on our agenda item tonight under Business 2. My focus in attending the conference was to gain knowledge of how school community members are involved to make for better schools. One shining example was Vallejo Unified, who on the verge of bankruptcy changed an entire school district with the leadership of the superintendent and the school board by having ways that the community could get involved and have their say. Further, many communities are implementing accessibility and open communication with school board members. Throughout California, many of the districts now have methods of enhancing the communication with the public and their elected officials. For example, communication is done through ongoing surveys and meeting with the public where they can have a one-on-one conversation with the elected board members that they have elected. The one-on-one conversation provides true concerns of the public, knowing that their board is listening. The previous example legitimately reinforces elected board members are available to hear the genuine concerns of the public, their constituents. Moreover, what I've learned from interacting with CSBA the last three terms, board members must provide the superintendent with sound knowledge of what you want as a goal as she is her only employee or he. With the aforementioned knowledge, an evaluation is committed throughout the state normally twice a year, just in the June, and then during the year can we see where is our district going, how are we going to meet this goal, or are we meeting them? Generally, a mid-year evaluation or just a discussion what our goals are we meeting those goals, is done again throughout the state. And the formal evaluation of the superintendent or only employee is done in June. In addition, I found out this last time, many boards begin meeting in January with the intent for setting goals for the next school year. So specifically, CSBA highly recommends the board members establish a retreat to enhance communication amongst the fellow board members as they begin the process of setting goals to guide their district for the next year. In summary, CSBA provides consultation for school board members and their superintendent. The ultimate goal of CSBA, which has over 1,000 school districts, and I think there's only six that do not belong now, to provide quality education for all California students. With CSBA, we are very fortunate. The legal counsel for CSBA, who is also the president, past president of Berkeley School Board, is highly knowledgeable, and anytime he's a phone call away to find out if you have a question. In addition, Terry Burns, who is in governmental relations, is very knowledgeable. She's been on the Natoma School Board for 28 years, starting her ninth term. She started when there was two schools, and they now have 15, and she's very knowledgeable. These are the kind of leadership that we have in CSBA. These individuals are great resources provided by CSA and always are open for professional dialogue. The goal of these individuals is to provide a solid information for all California students and governing boards. In short, it's been my privilege and honor to serve as a delegate for CSBA the last 6 years. And again, you'll get a copy of this on Friday in the Friday memo with the correction. Also, I want to mention one more thing. Overcoming the challenge of excellence is the group that Bernie and I belong, the Exchange Club. We're accepting applications and looking for students who are graduating seniors that would qualify for this. And I would mention we started, I think, Bernie, this is our fourth year. We have had a winner from this district. Lyndhurst has had, I think, three winners the last 4 years. We've had one national winner. So if you know anybody that would qualify, I'll give you the information. You can write it up, and we'll submit it to a committee, and then it goes down to the level. And at this level, if they make the next level, they win $1,000. And again, we've had, I think, $5,000 winners and one $10,000 winners. That's it. Thank you.
Mr. Harris? Mr. Danable.
Yes. I have three things I just want to go over real quickly. First of all, Mr. Fleury, I think that we need to hear constant CSBA reports so we know what's happening. I enjoyed that. That's the first thing. The second thing is I am happy to see principals, directors, students, teachers here tonight. This trustee hears you screaming. The second thing is, during one of the weekly notes, Mrs. Morris's class, I know what it's like to be a veteran. I know what it's like to be alone and afraid. Her class wrote letters to recovering veterans in Washington, D.C. That's above and beyond. I consider that a job well done. Should be noted. Thank you.
One comment. Coming up in a week from this Saturday at Marysville High School is the academic decathlon for Yuba County. We've been very much involved with that over the years, and our district has actually been number one in the state several times. So if you want to see kids in action, answering questions that as adults we couldn't answer ourselves, then it's a great opportunity to see the interviews and their speeches and their competition. That'll be at Marysville High School a week from this coming Saturday, the 7th, I believe, is the date. And once again, welcome to our new student rep, okay, from Lyndhurst. Okay, we want you to know that you don't, if you have homework and stuff, you know, you can skip out when you want, but we'll go from there.
Or if you just want to leave, you can leave. You don't have to have homework.
Hey, and sometimes some of us would like to leave. Okay. Opportunity for employee organizations to address the board. Marysville Joint Unified Teachers. Okay. Operating Engineers Local Union 3. California School Employees Association 326 and 648. Association of Management and Confidential Employees. Supervisory unit? Well, that was quick. All right. I have three public comment cards. I'll take them in order. Try to remember to be brief and to the point. There's supposedly a three-minute time limit. We don't usually have to stop people, but we'd want to go from there. And first, is it Devonna Alfred? Would you like to come up to the microphone and speak?
Hello, my name is Devonna Alfred, and I am attending this meeting on the behalf of Mr. Greco being forced to step down from his principal position. I feel that it was unprofessional that the district had him step down in the middle of the semester with no reason. Risking students not to reach their goals for the year, and not only was Mr. Greco a principal, he was also a student counselor. And he knew how they were going to go to pursue it in their educations. And I feel that as a Marysville Unified School District should have been more concerned about the students before personal reasons. I feel that everyone should voice their opinion and reasons, but also I feel that others should respect others' opinions and reasons because they're just opinions. So I stand by Mr. Greco because he has understood me and helped me a lot through a lot, and I have others to stand by me too. And I know that it's not possible for him to come back, but I will promise to let the public know how unprofessional Marysville Joint Unified School District is. And I have others to support me because Mr. Greco hasn't helped only one, but he's helped many.
Thank you very much. I forgot one thing. We cannot respond to public comments. We can listen, but we can't comment. And that's Brown Act. Next speaker is Gina Cameron. Okay, come on down.
Good evening. Good evening to the board, superintendent, assistant superintendents, community members, educators, parents, and students. We are all here tonight in this room, in this space, in time, for the same reason. All of us share a vested interest in our students, If we didn't, we wouldn't be here together now. This interest is what binds us together as human beings, even though each one of us comes from a different background and loves, dislikes, dreams of, and believes in different things. In the spirit of this common and shared purpose, I'm here tonight to provide a brief testament to Rocco Greco's true love for his students. During my short time as a first-year teacher in alternative ed, I have witnessed sacrifice upon sacrifice upon sacrifice on behalf of Mr. Greco for his students. He has spent untold hours reading and providing feedback to those students who now take online classes in addition to their traditional course load. I've witnessed too many personal connections being formed and strengthened to even count. I've seen students get the great second chance in life, take advantage of it, and stay on course when they could have easily traveled another path. But most of all, I've seen Mr. Rocco Greco tirelessly give to those without sun, light. Pardon me for a moment as I enter a world of imagination. In this world, I'm asked this question. What would you like to see happen, Mrs. Cameron? What is your hope for Mr. Greco? My answer thus follows. I'd like to see Mr. Greco working as a principal again, regardless of school site or school district. As a principal, Mr. Greco can touch more lives at a higher rate, perhaps at an even larger rate than a teacher can, who is, for the most part, burdened by the weight of an academic curriculum. Just like the students we reach every day, I'd like him to have his life's purpose restored, much like Lazarus was given life. But back to the here and now, a great majority of my own life lessons were learned here in the Marysville School District while I was a student, and now I'm a teacher. Perhaps the greatest gift any one educator in this district has given me is from my former principal, Mr. Cena. He showed me, perhaps knowingly, perhaps not, that everyone on this earth has a purpose. And if we are following our purpose, we are doing the right thing. Greco's purpose is to provide hope to students, to be their light on an overcast day. Please allow me to enter the world of imagination once more before I leave tonight. Scenario: I'm a board member or a person in the position to make structural changes at a school site. What would I be sure to do? What would be the most important objective as a leader of this great educational community? I would hold on to my best. My very best teachers, my very best principals would be my greatest asset, my greatest strength, and my greatest pride. Why? Because it's through educators that we reach the masses, and the masses are who we serve. I would also be very careful what messages I send to my budding future principals. I would send this: you're safe here at Marysville Unified. You are safe here at Marysville Unified. You are in the right place, because my heart is in the right place. So tonight, I'm asking those who are in or believe they are in a position to make structural change to dig deep into yourself and make sure your heart's in the right place. If it is, then you're doing the right thing. Thank you very much, and may God bless you and our beloved Mr. Greco.
Okay, our third public comment is Mr. Buck Weckman. If you'd like to approach.
Thank you for your time. Buck Weckman, Brownsville. I raised five children through the Marysville school system. Three of those children have their own families now that live in this area, and they either have children or will have children going to the Marysville Joint Unified School District. I'm here to speak to you a little bit tonight about the Yuba County revision of their marijuana cultivation ordinance. Okay, what this is a golden opportunity for you, and actually it's also a responsibility for you to get involved. And why is that? Well, I believe that your responsibility doesn't just start at Red Ribbon Week. It starts long before that, and how you can affect the communities that we live in and our children. In December, I sent some letters out to a number of trustees throughout the county, school board trustees, asking them to attend the meetings that are going on right now on the revision. Jim, yours came back to me. I had a short wrong address, I guess. But I was gratified to see some members of the Marysville Joint show up at that meeting that we had here earlier in January. Also had some educators there that spoke. We had Carolyn Tindell, Oz Diesner spoke, and also Barbara Keono from Marysville High School. Her presentation was particularly impacting on the effects of marijuana and drugs on our students. So this is going on right now, the revision of this ordinance. I urge you to get involved. Just recently, back in January 13th, I sent a letter to all the superintendents of our various school districts in the county. And I asked them also to forward that letter on to you as the governing board. I don't know if that's happened yet, but that was sent to your superintendent. And what I did in that one is I picked out a specific issue that should involve you in this process of revising the marijuana ordinance in our county. It apparently, I think, we'll probably get a ban on all outdoor growing of marijuana. That looks very favorable. But along with that, they looked at it a little bit differently. We're adopting what they call the Shasta model, and that comes out of Shasta County, which is all indoor. And because of that, they thought, you know, everything will be indoor now, and so we will drop the requirement of having a setback for marijuana grows from schools, school bus stops, areas where children gather, and so forth. So that doesn't appear in there right now. Now, I could probably bring that up, but I think that's up to the schools to do that as your responsibility. Right now, in the old ordinance, because there's outdoor growing, they do have setbacks. You can't have marijuana cultivation within a certain distance of the schools or school bus stops. So specifically, I'm talking about, let's say, school bus stops right now. Okay. If this ordinance goes forward without any modification, the protection for your children at school bus stops will go away. There won't be any setback. Of course, it'll be indoor, so that's not as offensive or as causal effect on our students, you might think, but that's not actually the case. Let's take, for example, almost all of these grows try to protect their valuable crop. Some of them are legal within the medical marijuana, and some of them are not. A lot aren't. And their crop is worth a lot of money. So it's not untypical at all for them to have guard dogs at their facilities. These are not your Cocker Spaniels or your French Poodles. Okay, these are dogs that are trained to protect their crop. Often, they're at locations where the owner really doesn't live there. They're gone a lot. Okay, I can take you out and show you some right now where you walk by the place and there's these two dogs that are growling underneath the fence and scratching at the fence and so forth. So if you lose the setback distance from your school bus stops, you'll be having kids catch the bus or let off in the afternoon at a location where there could be this situation right next to it. And we know dogs get out. That's a common occurrence. And these are the type of dogs you don't want to get out. So I hope I don't read that we drop the ball, the protection for our students at schools and at school bus locations goes away, and then we see it in the article sometime in the newspaper where a couple kids were mauled because of dangerous dogs. So,
Buck, I need to interrupt you there. Okay, we're kind of over the time limit.
Okay, I'm done. Okay.
All right, thank you very much for coming.
Okay, so anyway, hope you get involved. I'm going to leave you the ordinance.
That's all right. It's nice to see people active in the community working with us there. Okay, that concludes public comments. Superintendent's report, and it'll be done by Mr. Carrion tonight.
And actually, in the absence of Dr. Todd, who unfortunately isn't here, and we've seen her as a trooper get through some illnesses and true to her duties as a superintendent on board nights, she's typically always here. As she had planned, and unfortunately due to her absence, she will update the board on the LCAP process at our February 10th meeting. And so she does have a full scope of presentations and certainly announcements to make associated with that. But I do want to apprise the board and ask you to lock in a date associated with the Access CSY, that's the Colusa Sutter Yuba chapter of the AXA unit, the Association for California School Administrators, as it will be hosting its 2015 Administrator of the Year Award Dinner. As I understand it, there are a number of our site leaders, department leaders, who are strong candidates for some categories, and so it would be nice to have a contingent of board members there to support them. So February 26th, I want you to think about that date, and hopefully by the end of next week, you'll be able to let us know so that we can reserve spots for you at that event, and it'd be nice, again, to have not only a presence there as members of the Joint Unified Dignitaries, but certainly to support those that are in the running for some of these categorical awards in their various categories. It's being held at the Hillcrest Plaza Room over on Julie Drive in Yuba City, Hillcrest Plaza, and that's February 26th from 6:30 to 9. And so the CSY chapter has some certainly a nice dinner planned and also some libation prior to that. And it was a good event last year, and it would be, again, nice to represent Marysville Joint Unified at that event. So with that, again, the LCAP, I'm sorry, that's February 26th. Thank you.
All right. Next item on the agenda is approval of minutes from the previous meetings. We have three meetings in one motion, 12-9-14, 12-18-14, and 1-13-15. If there are no additions or changes to the minutes, could I have a motion?
I'll make a motion to
move by Mr. Danable. Okay. Is there a second? Mr. Fleury? Second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Unanimous? Any nays? I didn't say any nays. All right, the consent agenda. Would anybody like anything pulled from the consent agenda?
I would like facilities and energy management. Item number two, contract. Electric and plumbing.
Which one?
Purchasing department. It is facilities and energy. Yeah, it's item number two, please.
Okay, and I would like under educational services number six to pull that one.
Okay. I would also like number 12 under personnel services. And
number two under educational services for me.
Number 12, personnel services. And also under business services, I would like to pull items 4-10. I'm not sure if we can bundle those together, but I have the same concern with all those.
Educational services number two.
No, this one, the pull two.
through the chair.
Did we pull that new position number 12?
Yes.
Yes, that was already done. Mm-hmm.
You pulled education number 2.
Oh, mine was educational. I'm sorry, educational number 6. Educational services number 6.
We're just really trying to figure out what we're pulling.
Okay.
Go through from the beginning and say what's pulled, would you?
Okay, it looks to me like it's we pulled educational services number 6.
Not 2.
And that was my mistake.
Okay, so number 6.
Okay. And the next one is personnel services number 12. And then facilities and energy management department, that's
number two.
And then under business services 4 through 10.
2 through 10.
4 through 10.
4 through 10.
4 through 10.
My goodness, there's so many here that.
Why don't you start with one, I guess?
Yeah. Why don't we just approve?
We could approve all of the ones that are not pulled.
Items.
Okay.
All right. Two.
One. All right. So, if I have a motion except for item number 6 under educational services, item number 12 under personnel services, item number 1 under facilities and energy management, and also under those is number 2, and then number 4 through under business services 4 through 10. So excluding those, do I have a motion to approve the amended consent agenda?
I make a motion to approve the amended consent agenda.
Okay. Moved by Mr. Danimal. Is there a second? All right. Seconded by Mr. Rasmussen. Should we go in order?
We need to.
Need a vote.
Oh, okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Okay, now we should probably just go in order.
Yes.
All right. For number 6, which I had pulled of educational services, in reading through this field trip, I'm not going to try and get it a no vote, but I notice on the background that students will participate in workshops where they will utilize leadership skills, practice public speaking, and promote Common Core in ag literacy. Okay, now I'm no stranger to Common Core. Okay, in my dislike, because I'm really for diversified education. I think that's where we make our huge gains over the past 200 years. So I just was wondering about that particular issue. So evidently we have somebody already to speak to it.
We do. And I want, before she starts to speak, I want to say thank you to all the principals. They've been coming now for the overnight field trips. And I would really like to say thank you for everything they've been doing to get those field trips in order for us. It takes a lot of work and effort, paperwork, time, and energy, and not to mention that, to come here tonight as well. I'm very, very grateful for that. And I would speak to that, but I have someone who can speak to it so much better than I do, and Miss Bonnie McGill.
Yes? Let me read it one more time so I know what I'm talking about. Yeah. Okay, Bernie. Common Core. Okay.
Are you asking or?
No. The request has been made for me to take 4 students down to San Jose to the Good Teaching Conference North. And the reason being is because my students do a much better job than I addressing what we're doing in the areas of agriculture literacy. And in order for us to go into classrooms to teach about agricultural literacy, I have my students address the Common Core standards so that we're meeting all the disciplines in order to be a valid presentation, be worth the students' time, be worth the parents' time, that find out what their students are doing, the teachers, principals. So when you mention the word Common Core, that's where, as a teacher, I'm directed to be going. And if I'm going that direction with my students and my 9 through 12 curriculum, then I am teaching them to research out the standards, especially new generation science standards, so that they're using those standards when they're going into the classrooms, so that when we're taking up 50 to 60 minutes of an elementary school teacher's time, it's valid. And I've got a principal here from our BOGA who actually even brought us in to teach the science standards for first graders. Mr. Preston, Mrs. McKay's here, and we've been in her classroom and have taught the standards. But we, not just the science standards, but a lot of times we address the language arts, social studies, and math. So I'm not sure what you're asking.
I understand that.
Okay.
I didn't pull it saying that it wouldn't pass, or, you know, that kind of thing. I'm pretty clear on my stand and my research that I would like to see. I would like to see control of the educational system not only return to the state, but also to our communities. So having a Common Core standard for the entire nation is not really in my estimation. Plus, I see a huge amount in the billions, actually more than $1 trillion to be made over the next 10 years by the people that are pushing it. So it's not all this is a wonderful program. It's all this is a lot of money, too. Okay.
Thank you, Mr. X.
If there's no other comments on that, then we'll bring that up for a vote.
Individual, probably.
Okay. So, for this item number 6 under educational services, is there a motion to pass it?
I make a motion.
Okay. Moved by Mr. Harris. Seconded by Mr. Fleury. All those in favor, say aye.
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 Aye. The good news is you got this one in on time. Congratulations.
Okay.
Miss McGill has been on time with all of hers recently.
Wait. Well, I think we're done with that.
You have to hear this. And hi, Randy. Last year we took students down there and they actually taught a lesson to other teachers on what we do in ag literacy, and it went really well. And this year they asked me to come back and talk about this grant that I received. And then the woman who's kind of in charge called back up and said, well, we want your students to come. I'm like, yeah, because they do all the work. I just sit and watch. So that's what we do.
All right. Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, that brings us to item 12 of personnel services. Okay, new position, safety and energy manager.
Yes. When I was reading that or looking at it, we have quite a few new construction buildings or buildings that were constructed, and hopefully that those energy efficient items were put into those buildings. The other thing that I was thinking about or looking at is if we could utilize our Prop 39 funds in order to maybe hire a consultant to come in and identify those low-hanging fruit energy waste items and try to use the Prop 20 or Prop 39 funds to correct those. We had a budget given to us for that position, and over the 2 years, it was about $250,000 to fund that position. At this point in time, I'd like to see us utilize those funds more in the classroom with maybe teachers and more aides instead of the energy and safety position. The other thing I was looking at from the safety standpoint, when we looked at all of our school SARCs that were in this year's board packet, We actually have 18 schools that have school site safety plans already that are addressing a lot of the safety issues. So it seems like it may be some redundancy to me. So at this point in time, from what I'm looking at, I'm just not sure if the need is there.
Mr. Chairman, I've had the pleasure of working with Randy for about 20 years now, and we discussed, had a chance to at least. Many times, two-year positions become endless positions, go on and on and on. I would like to see, it's not a surprise that we would fill more in the arts if we're going to start filling positions, or at least look that way. There are options out there that I think would, switch lights on and off. I've been at schools where the air conditioner has been on at 4 o'clock in the afternoon in the summertime. I mean, those things have to be corrected. And, but I don't know if we need someone full time to take the lead on that.
I think that's why Mr. Rasmussen was talking about just having someone come in. I know when you talked to us earlier, you talked to us about contracting with someone for a period of 2 years to do that, and it was going to cost, 5 years, and it was going to cost a tremendous amount of money, and it was going to cost more money than this one person was going to cost. But, the more you think about it, there's a lot of low-hanging fruit, if you want to put it that way, that they can go around or, have somebody come in. And I'm sure we could find, I'm sure you guys could find someone or some consultant to come in and come in for X amount of dollars to give you a report on what's going to happen or what you can do to make these things happen. Is that more or less what you're... Yeah.
That's what I tried to do. And plus, I brought in the 2 year because it always seems like you get a position in, it starts growing, and it starts growing a life of its own. I think it's something we can look at. And
I think Ryan wants to say.
Yeah,
sure
he does. I'd like to say that this position, and we showed you numbers last time in terms of the potential savings and what we've actually realized, myself and our Director of Facilities and Energy Management have realized in 2 years, you actually will save money and it will provide you with opportunities to provide additional services, obviously financially too. We have the room to make the same increases and hire this position. But again, this position will save more money than you spend on it. We've seen it happen. We know it could happen. The low-hanging fruit you speak of, somebody has to be there to make that happen. Mr. Crawford talked about being at a gym and the air was on. Well, that's because nobody's there to monitor the systems. Nobody's there to be there and make sure that they're operating only when they need necessary to be operating. We can get a consultant under Prop 39. You're going to spend a lot more than $123,000 a year. I promise you that. Also, the Prop 39, we can fund some of this position out of Prop 39. We have $98,000 already budgeted. We'll spend less of that out of general fund because we can spend up to $44,000 out of Prop 39. These things don't happen by magic. If you pay firms, they have overheads. It costs a lot more money. This is the most cost-efficient way to do this, and you will see results. In addition to safety, yeah, we have comprehensive plans, but do we have the supplies we need on campus? Are we doing the simulations to the degree that we are prepared to handle certain events that happen on campus? We've made progress, and there's been a lot of great efforts from people on this campus, but we want to do it better. We're trying to get the most out of these dollars, and we think we can get, out of all the things we implement, especially from the classified business side, you're going to get a lot more return on your dollars here than you'll see in a lot of places. And not only that, there'll be an accountability mechanism where we come to the board quarterly and project our results. It will take a little while to build results with energy. We have to set our baseline, but we'll show results on this program. So, again, I know you see the dollars in front of you, but it will save more dollars than what you spend on it. And it will create an environment that we believe is better monitored and safer for our students. I think the program is one of the... one of the few, I think, that really outweighs what the cost. The benefits far outweigh the cost.
I think as far as the energy management goes and as far as turning off air conditioners and lights and everything, I would probably think that our teachers have the ability to be told, hey, turn off the lights, and they're going to get turned off. And that right there changes the whole scenario of this position.
That's part of the program. I'd like to speak on that, because part of it is working with your current staff. We need their help. We need to work with teachers. But part of it, too, is it's simple things. Like, we have certain equipment. Yeah, we've had equipment installed. It's not operating properly. We don't have a ton of maintenance staff. We need somebody dedicated to going out, making sure that the equipment and working with vendors, because we have a lot of situations where things aren't operating correctly. You know, we're paying to cool down rooms to far below, you know, what we would cool any room. It's not comfortable for the classes. That costs us money. Why are we, you know, there's a lot of different things they're doing, but you need somebody on the ground. Plus, even, it's not as simple as just turning off stuff. There's equipment that's inefficient. There's shutdown sequences when things, you know, trust everybody to shut things down. Part of this job, they go on a Friday night and make sure things are shut down. They make sure things aren't operating. There's a lot of, you, to really fully implement and get the benefits of this, you do need somebody. And again, I think it's a minimal investment for the type of returns you can get on.
If equipment is inefficient, we're talking about two bills here. That means replacing the equipment too.
There's rebates. There's a lot of different. It's a very multifaceted, multi-layered thing. This energy management is not simple. If you want to properly do it in the vein of what this department is, you're going to need. You can have more than one person. We're just trying to see how one will work. Again, and we can, the job again, we can make it very clear that we have to see results. I think even when you bring in a company, whoever you bring in, I mean, you want to see results. But again, a consultant, you're going to pay more money in the long run. And they can just leave. This is going to be invested in the district.
I'm not talking about bringing a consultant in to do the job. I'm talking about bringing a consultant in to say, do maybe take 2 months and do or a month and do a report on the things that are in the district. That go, someone goes around from that company on the weekend and sees that the heaters or the air conditioners are on, and they write it down. And then at the end of their projected 2 months or month, they give you a report and say, here are the things we found that are wrong. I'm not talking about hiring someone as a consulting company to come in and stay with you for 2 years and go, you know, we're trying to do our best. I'm just talking about someone to come in and do like an audit or a evaluation, you know, of the district. And, you know,
we're already working on that with PG&E. We don't have to spend money on those things. Again, it's about having people in the field to actually make these things occur, because there's one thing to identify and there's another thing to monitor and to make sure it does happen.
I understand that.
Come in?
If I may, before Ms. Schlesser takes the mic, what about the possibility of approving the position but holding it in abeyance, whereas we're not hiring anybody until such time as a consultant has been consulted, and or we give the opportunity to department heads and or principals to develop a committee where they can pick the low-hanging fruit and incentivize it in a way that if we have a cadre of 4 or 5 principals, maybe with support of some teachers, to say, okay, we can pick the low-hanging fruit and see a reduction of 5% to 8% in a 6-month period, and if that is a progression that we see acceptable, then we can proceed. However, with the position in place, without permission to fill it, we can then revisit that at a later point in a timely manner so that we can capitalize on the Prop 13 grant model and applying for it through the development of a plan, also through the incentivization of the program with the principals. Then we can move forward. Then we can come back later, 4, 6 months, and say, we tried these other measures, we incentivized it, we had some collaboration opportunities with principals, teachers, and unfortunately, the principals, it's going to drop on your lap or the department, but here's your chance to get $5,000, $8,000, $9,000, $10,000 for your general fund purpose allocation. And at the same time, we can then revisit the savings. The position is there, not to be filled yet until we get approval. But by passing it, we have that in abeyance while these other measures are put in place. Just a thought.
You know, that is like taking an HBO channel for 30 days for free and forgetting to cancel it. In other words, I think that this thing should be revisited, but not with any approval at this point. Because that stuff catches up with us.
Yeah, I just wanted to say that over at Edgewater School, if it's being monitored, you would see a reduction in energy already, because I and several of my colleagues received a thermostat. My classroom is no longer 49 degrees.
Yeah, yeah.
I turn it off when I don't need it. It comes on during the day when I don't need it, and I turn it off. If the heater's going to be insistent, because they give me a range, and I can't quite, the range on the heat is too high, so it gets too hot, so I just turn it completely off, or I'll even turn on to air, which isn't going to come on because it's so low. It's complicated, but I can do it. And so we've had a reduction at our site, I'm sure, because my classroom's not a meat locker anymore. And if everybody at Edgewater had that, Edgewater would be saving a lot of money already. Now, the primary reason I actually stood up was, and I hear you say something about PG&E, not all of us teachers have always just been teachers. I, for example, have been a wildlife biologist for a good part of my life. But we have somebody on our rep council today who used to work for PG&E. And she informs us that there's this program where they will come out and do something like an audit for free. So why don't we have that report yet?
Okay, I think the suggestion, too, that it be an incentive for staff, if they knew that if we save this energy, the money comes back to our school on what we saved.
That's a good point.
Yeah, so that would be an incentive.
I think Mr. Curran's suggestion is a way to go, because if we do have it, if we do have that committee and they meet, and it, the principals are agreeable to it and department heads are agreeable to it, you know, I don't know. I just think that
work needs to be done. We need to have that report before we approve anything, simply because we don't have all the information. We're having people telling us that they can save money. I feel pretty confident that we can save money just by doing the right thing.
Yeah.
And I'd like to just see if PG&E will do that for us. I'd like to see that. If we need to get somebody in here to do that, I'd like to see that. But I don't like having a position like this just hanging out there so that a couple of meetings or a couple months down the road, it will show up on our agenda again saying that we have failed, because I want to see the report first personally
before we see all that information before this comes back.
So my question then is,
we have to fill it. We would see that all that information.
So my question once again is, why would we approve this position tonight, just to save time later on?
That would be that's the way I would understand it, that it would be, we would approve this as a position with the understanding that we would not advertise until we received enough information to make a judgment.
Well, that would mean it would have to come in front of the board again, right?
Yes.
Okay, so then why are we even dealing with this now? If it's going to come up again, just to save some time looking for the right person?
You can establish a timeline that says that it isn't coming back to the board until July 1 at the very earliest. I mean,
well, I'd like to see it come back to the board when we have the information.
Right.
Until then, I don't see any reason we could get caught in that and have to hire that person because we have a bad report or we don't know the report. I want to see the report untainted. Let me draw my own opinion and then make a decision.
Ryan, when would you think we'd start seeing results?
Well, you got to set a baseline. Who's going to go through and use the software to set all that data? You don't have anybody to do that, so.
I'm getting what Glenn's saying and what Mr. Carrion's saying.
So with what Mr. Danabil's saying, I'm thinking if we're coming to bringing it back to a board meeting, could we bring back this original item as it is whenever we would wish?
Sure.
But until then, it's approved. Okay. Until then, it could be actually filled any time.
Not if we're approving it or not doing anything tonight with it. We would bring it back in this original form at a later date if we wished.
Yes.
With the data to support it.
Yes.
Yes.
So. I think we should have a motion. Okay. I'll entertain a motion. And you can change. Somebody would like to make the statement, Glenn, or would you like to make a statement.
I've got one more question and comment first. This is a multifaceted position with the safety also in there. Ryan, my question would be, would it be possible to start enhancing our safety through facilities department without hiring somebody else? Our projects are winding down. We don't have a lot.
The facilities department requires a lot more work than is realized. It won't happen.
Okay.
Okay, if somebody has to make a motion on what to do. Okay, then.
You know, I make the motion that we take this item.
Yeah, it'll die from lack of a motion if.
The motion that we revisit this whole thing, even in 2 weeks, just so we have time to collaborate and get our heads together. It's too vague. I understand what Ryan is saying. I understand our concerns. I just don't want to make a bad decision. Too much money.
So if I understand what you just said, you made a motion to revisit this in 2 weeks.
Yes.
Is there a second?
It just dies for lack of a motion.
Okay, yeah. The item dies for lack of a motion.
Yeah.
Okay. That brings us to facilities manager and energy management number one.
Yeah, I believe I pulled that one, Mr. Rex. Ryan, why do we need to hire somebody to inspect this job? We can't do that work ourselves.
Well, it's related to a facilities project of building a new building, and it is specialized to a degree. I don't know if Cynthia wants to kind of...
Oh, I'm sorry, Cynthia, I didn't see you back there. I could ask you the question.
A little more detail to this item.
Hi, good evening. Sorry to hide in the back there. So I'd be happy to answer any questions. I'm not sure exactly what your question is.
Well, it's a shade canopy inspection, and we're going to pay somebody up to $1,000 to go out there and make sure that they're following the plans. Isn't that something that we could do in-house? Isn't that something that somebody in facilities department's qualified to do?
It's typical practice to have a DSA-approved inspector on projects that are approved by DSA, and in this case, that would be an approved shades canopy. So DSA has oversight on this project, so it's a standard practice to have a DSA-approved inspector for the project. I will certainly be overseeing the project. I visit the sites often when they're under construction, so that will be a part of what I am doing, among other things. But that hopefully answers your question.
Cynthia, are you capable of doing that inspection, or do we have anybody in maintenance that can do it?
Well, I'll be overseeing the project.
Well, what does overseeing mean? Does that mean watching them inspect
I'll
it?
I'll be making sure it's installed per plan and per specifications and per approved by DSA, but I am not a DSA-approved inspector.
So for any project that has to go through DSA, you need a DSA-approved inspector. If you don't have one, you're not compliant with DSA regulations. It's a requirement.
Well, this whole item in the agenda says nothing about DSA or whatever. So how would we know that?
I'll be sure to include that next time to make it more clear.
Okay.
You're welcome.
All right. Any other discussion then? Is there a motion on this particular item?
I'll make the motion to approve facilities number one.
Is there a second?
Second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded to approve facilities and energy management department number one. All those in favor, please raise your hands.
Aye.
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 Okay, 7-0. Item two, a contract with Fletcher's Plumbing.
That's my.
Oh.
That's my pool. my question, I don't know, maybe I'm putting it, bringing it down to too simplistic, but it's some door sweeps, some styles, and thresholds, right?
Correct.
And so we're contracting out to Fletcher's Plumbing and Contracting for $2,400 to put some door sweeps and styles and some thresholds in. We don't have the ability to do that. I mean, I don't know, and it doesn't seem like, I don't know how long it would take. They have two men that are approved to do it, so we don't have anyone that can do that.
I can't speak for Terry's staff, honestly, and I know they're capable and skilled trades folks. However, it is helpful, and we've decided that it's appropriate to track those costs under the project since it was new construction, and unfortunately at that point in time not included in the specifications in the design of that project, and it's been leaking, and so we'd like to get that fixed so it doesn't damage the wood floor.
No, I understand we need to get it fixed. I'm just thinking that is it two doors, four doors, or six
doors?
It's
a set
of
double doors. It's a south-facing gym doors.
So we're paying $2,400 to have new door sweeps, styles, and...
Well, this was original. When I came on board, I found that this was an ongoing item that had been outstanding for some time.
Okay.
And being as proactive as possible,
right,
which is what I like to do, is to solve outstanding issues. I found that the cost several years ago was approximately $1,400, and then with you add the new prevailing wage requirements, and that drives the cost up, and then the cost of hardwares and such, that was the new price. So the original quote was no longer valid because they're normally good between 30 and 60 days, so I got the new quote, today's prices and per prevailing wage requirements.
Okay.
I would just like to know if our facilities department has communicated with our maintenance department.
Terry and I speak frequently. We talk all the time.
Okay, so, I mean, something that could save us $2,400 for a few screws at the bottom of a door, can our maintenance department handle?
So I can tell you it's not that simple.
Okay. Then we need to know this. I think all I'm asking is our maintenance department capable of doing this job?
We can do a lot. Okay. It just depends on what you want us to leave behind when we're looking at this.
No, I get that. I just want to make sure.
You know, the new building, that should have been handled through facilities.
All right. Well, even though it should have been handled through facilities, we're putting out $2,400 to do a job that you say your maintenance guys can do.
Right.
Is that...
My maintenance group.
I'm not saying they can't.
No,
Maria. That's not.
We're just trying to get a picture of a job that for $2,400, putting some sweeps in and everything else. I get it. I get what you're saying is complicated, but are we at least capable of doing a $2,400 job?
Yeah.
Okay. So then I would think that we could prioritize things in departments, right, and then end up doing these jobs.
Yeah.
Did we didn't go up with any bids on this?
I don't believe you have to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well.
It's
is it under 15 or 10?
$14,999.
Yeah.
Under 15. Okay.
This was a low cost item. We wanted to track with the project as a part of the project, so we'd know the outcome of the total cost over time.
And very sorry.
No, it's okay. That's what I'm here for. Happy to answer questions.
So we're going to be able to bill back and get our money? Yeah. I would say probably not, but
yeah.
That'd be a long battle for a little bit of money if we want to tackle other things that, you know, are the forefront, like energy management and such.
No, I wouldn't want to do that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, item two, is there a motion? Would somebody like to make a motion? I think that's the end of the item. Okay, so that's not approved.
Dies for lack of a motion.
Dies for lack of a motion. All right, and that brings us to...
Well, no.
I'm asking that,
okay.
Right?
No, I'll make a motion because we need it fixed.
We can't let the building deteriorate.
No, I was waiting. I thought somebody was going to make a motion.
Well, no, I was asking a question. Okay. Does it die now or not?
I'll make a motion to approve item number two under facilities and management.
Okay, it's moved by Mr. Harris, seconded by Mr. Fleury. Okay, all those in favor of passing this motion, please raise your hands.
Aye.
Okay, that was six.
Seven.
Nay? Or is it seven? Yeah. Unanimous.
One abstain.
Okay, then brings us to
4-10.
All right, business services.
Excuse me, Mr. Rex. May I say something, please? The next time maybe we're confronted with something like this, we can have, like, hearing from our maintenance department and our facilities department together so we know what we're capable of doing and why we don't have to use contractors and things like that. That'd be easier.
Okay, items 4-10 have been pulled on business services items.
Randy.
So when do we go with that?
Well, I would like to go ahead and just express my concern before you talk, if you don't mind. As we looked or learned, is one of the things we really need to do is to follow policy as a board, and I certainly think that we have a policy that says that we need to approve items unless there's an emergency situation. I can understand that, before the items actually get completed and the contractors get paid. It does look like number four was an emergency item. My only concern there, it looks like it was done at the end of September, and now it's finally coming to the board to be approved now. So my recommendation or my request is from the superintendent to see if somehow we can get some type of procedures in place to make sure that we try to follow policy.
Right, exactly. Before anything is destroyed, removed, or anything, it'd be nice to ask the board to have that done before it's done and then ask us.
So in this case, you know, you had a leaking water main running right into a school. You know, we could put it on the board agenda and wait, or we can go ahead and bring it to the assistant superintendents and get it approved. It would have been foolish to just leave it running.
And I agree.
I think the bigger issue is bringing it to payment 5 months later.
Yeah.
Because
that's an emergency.
Now, you did the right thing, in my opinion, by acting immediately on the leak.
So I couldn't tell you for sure when the contract left my office. Normally when they do, if it's an emergency job, I'll go ahead and actually still do a contract, even though it can be done with a PO, because I want to make sure everything's in place with the contractors. So right across the top of the contracts, if you get copies of those, it'll say emergency, emergency job. So if it's health or safety, or if for some reason something happens, that we have a tight window of time that we have to make, we'll run it as an emergency with approval.
And the item is marked that way.
Yes.
My biggest concern is, again, the work was done September 29th.
Yes. It's a long time before you
know. And now we're coming, bringing it to the board for approval.
So I send the stuff forward, and when it gets pressed on is between my supervisor and the board. It's not my issue.
I got you.
That's kind of blunt, but...
In other words, you have done what you have done to notify us sooner. For some reason, we did not get notified.
Sure.
Is that what you're saying?
So, in this case, I noticed it said, I don't know if you got the information of the actual cost. The actual cost was only $4,800. So, it says on there not to exceed, but that's because that's my limit.
$4,800
is what it cost for the repair.
Okay, any further discussion? Okay.
So I was actually just going to make a motion to approve items 4 through 10 under business services.
So I think you probably want to take these one at a time.
Yeah.
No. My concern was that as a bundle, it's not that I want to approve all those items. It was more my concern that we're not following policy. So it's not an individual item because they were all under the same reason that I pulled those.
And I just one thing is we have contracts here for one contractor. We have three contracts that total over $21,000. So I'm wondering about that issue, the $15,000. Is that one time, or are we spreading the contract out, or?
No, they're completely different projects.
Okay, so that
if it was the same project,
I know, but that won't be a problem.
If it was all one project and you split it, yeah, but it wasn't.
But so the way it sits now.
Yeah, you want to look at the sites. You know, so if there's one project at a site, and the contractor's doing work at another site, it's a completely different project.
Yeah, that's my question.
And that's the easiest way to distinguish.
That's my question. Thank you.
So that's your first way to tell.
Okay, we have a motion by Mr. Rasmussen.
Mr. Rex, I have a couple more questions. On some of this stuff, the paperwork, it wasn't submitted till the 21st of January. Has this contractor already been paid?
No.
This job was completed.
That's one of my big concerns is, you know, once I hire
September
a contractor
30th,
and shake
so
his
hand.
So
he's been waiting October, November, December. He's been waiting almost 4 months for his money.
So in the case of number four, he was paid on 11/20.
He was paid when? On 11/20?
Yeah. On number five, he hasn't been paid yet. The bill actually came in and it was forwarded for payment just today.
Okay.
So.
I understand that, but why didn't we get these in November when they're Christmas break jobs that are going to be done? So that we could approve them prior to them doing them, because if one of them is not approved and the contractor doesn't get paid, then we have a lawsuit.
So that's a good question. And I can tell you that this issue and its cause didn't exist back when the maintenance director reported directly to the CBO. When I bring forward a list and I have to get approval, I can't start even bidding the jobs until I get approval. So a lot of these Christmas jobs or the holiday jobs, they start at Thanksgiving. The approval didn't actually come in until a day and a half before the kids were gone. Normally by then, everything's in place so things can happen. So when those approvals were given, it was perfectly clear in the meeting that, you know, these items will have to be approved without board approval.
Do you have documentation showing when you submitted these requests?
Yes, I actually have it here if you want.
No, I don't need it tonight, but
okay,
do you mind giving it to the superintendent's office and sending it out in a Friday memo?
Yeah, I can back up anything I say.
Could you also give a copy to the president of the board, please?
Sure. So in many cases, when the decision is made late on what the project is going to be that we do, you know, you have the window of time to get all the contracts done and get all the bids in and get all the paperwork processed to go forward to the board. So just like in this case, those projects are decided upon too late. So the work has to happen while the kids are gone. So in many cases, you know, the decision will be made to go ahead and go forward and get the work done. And then take the hot seat. I know I saw other people in this pan before, and it wasn't comforting, you know. But I sure don't mind answering for it.
Okay, we're still at the point where it has been moved to approve items 4 through 10 under business services. We need a second. Okay, Mr. Harris is second. Okay, all those in favor, please raise your hands.
Aye.
Passes, I think.
7-0.
Thank you.
Thank you, Terry.
You know, anytime the board has a question about maintenance, don't be shy. You can come by the office, drag me out. I'll answer. Thank you.
All right. Moving on to new business. Board bylaw 9270, conflict of interest. Okay, we need to open up a public hearing, so I'm going to do that now. Okay. And was there any discussion on this?
I make a motion to close the public hearing.
It's been moved by Mr. Harris to close the public hearing, seconded by Mr. Rasmussen. And now we need a motion to approve the revisions. Pardon?
You've got to take a vote on the closing.
Oh.
I can't make any mistakes.
I'm sorry. All right. Okay. All those in favor of closing the hearing? Okay. Aye. Okay. And now we need a motion to approve the revisions.
I make the motion.
Okay.
I'll second it.
Mr. Crawford makes the motion to approve the revisions. Is there a second?
I second.
I have a question real quick. Is this going to cause this board policy, being that we did not approve a director of facilities and energy management? What does that do to this board policy, Mr. Carrion?
We did approve. The director of facilities and energy management is Cynthia. That was
approved. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I was thinking the other one that we...
Understood.
So I'm going to second that motion.
All right. Mr. Danable, second the motion. Okay. All those in favor of Board Bylaw 9270?
Aye.
Okay. Unanimous. Okay. Next, it's Resolution 2014-15, repeal of school district reserve cap. Okay. This is an advocation to the state to change a law, okay, that we can keep more than the minimum reserve that they have stated. So I'm very careful about looking this over, but I'll entertain a motion to pass Resolution 14-15-15.
Andy, are you here to make a comment on this? Okay. I'll make the motion then for approval.
Mr. Crawford, is there a second? Second, Mr. Danable? Okay. All those in favor, please raise your hands.
Aye.
Aye. What? Mr. Fleury? Oh, okay.
Second.
Unanimous. All right, and child development program up next. Okay, that's enough. We don't want this anymore.
The resolution before you is just a contract amendment that we were issued by the Department of Education to increase our budget by approximately 5%. So we're tickled to get it. Any questions? Not at this time? Okay.
You're tickled, we're tickled.
I like this. We went around and around on $1,400, but we got $1,651,000.
To the good.
Yeah, piece of cake. Right.
I'd like to make the motion to approve.
Okay, Mr. Crawford, make the motion. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Okay, Mr. Boom seconds it. Okay, all those in favor, please.
Aye.
Aye. Any nays?
Yeah.
Okay, that brings us to the end of our meeting. Any last minute? Too late.
Good job. Too late.